Hello, and welcome to the Murder House Radio Show. I'm your host, X. On this show, we will be covering serial killers, killers, mass shooters, disappearances, true crime, and the most deplorable things and people in history. All that good, dark stuff. The Murder House Radio Show will be a radio show / podcast. I will be uploading videos every Friday at 4 p.m. Mountain Standard Time. Make sure you hit the like and subscribe button. Once you hit subscribe, hit the bell notification and select all to get all notifications if you are viewing on YouTube. Hit the follow button if you are listening on a podcasting platform. So sit down, get comfortable, grab some coffee or whatever your preferred beverage is, turn off the lights, and enjoy the show. Today's episode will be on Richard Leonard Kuklinski, aka the Iceman. Now, Kuklinski or the Iceman, I'll call him either Kuklinski or the Iceman throughout this episode. He wasn't a serial killer per se, he was more of a hitman. So this will be the first non-serial killer I cover on this broadcast or a podcast, whatever you want to call it. And again, the links to the sources and all that stuff will be in the description below, so go check those out for further information and stuff if you would like. But the Iceman, I think he's my favorite killer, I guess you could say. He's a savage, but he's still a piece of shit, because, you know, he didn't treat his wife very well, but he never touched his kids. But he also, like, hurt and tortured animals and stuff. But, you know, hitmen, you know, everybody, likes a good hitman or whatever. But, he has a good movie on him or whatever. It's on Netflix. It's called The Iceman. And then he has a bunch of interviews from in prison, and those are cool. The interview that stuck out the most, I don't remember the name, but, like, he described one hit where, He described it in such detail, and me and my brother joke about this shit all the time. He's like, yeah, I walked in the building, I went up to his door, it was a nice door, an expensive door. He actually said that, like that, which me and my brother joke about. But he was like, I knocked on the door and he came to the peephole and looked at the peephole. And lots of people don't know this, but when you look at the peephole, the light disappears from the other side, so I knew someone was looking. So I put the gun up to the peephole, and I shot him in the face. And that's how he described that hit. There's that. That's the kind of guy we're dealing with right here. But let's get into this. So Richard was born in April 11th, 1935, and he passed away March 5th, 2006. And it says he was an American serial criminal and murderer. A hired hitman. Richard was engaged in criminal activity for most of his adult life. He ran a burglary ring and distributed pirated pornography. So, like, if you downloaded a movie off the internet onto a disc and sold it, basically. Kuklinski killed several people he lured with offers of business deals so that he could rob them of their cash. So he'd kill them and rob them. So while law enforcement officials described him as someone who killed for profit. So yeah, a hitman. Kuklinski lived with his wife and children in New Jersey suburbs of Dunmont. They knew him as a loving father and husband who provided for his family. But no one who also... but also knew he had a violent temper and was physically abusive to his wife. So, as I said, that's one of the reasons I dislike him. His family stated that they were unaware of his crimes. Most mafia people and stuff like that, people who live that life, usually have two separate lives. They have a family, and then they do their crimes or whatever, which I could see. But sometimes the family is involved in their dirty dealings, I guess you could say. He was given the monarchy, the Iceman, by authorities after they discovered that he had frozen the body of one of his victims in an attempt to disguise the time of death. Yeah, he used to do that. He would freeze them for like years sometimes, thaw them out completely, well, mostly completely until he slipped up or whatever that one time, but freeze them completely and de-thaw them. And I just dumped them somewhere so they had no clue when the person died. He came under investigation after his burglary gang linked him to murders. An 18-month-long investigation led to his arrest in December 1989. In 1988, he was sentenced to life imprisonment after being convicted of killing two members of his burglary gang and two other associates, so four people he was convicted on killing. In 2003, he received an additional 30-year sentence after confessing to the murder of a mob-connected police officer. Yep. New York was pretty dirty back then. A lot of places were dirty back in the 70s and 80s and 90s and stuff like that. More so than they are now, but you know. But after Kuklinski's murder and murder convictions or whatever, he gave interviews to writers, prosecutors, criminologists, and psychiatrists. Yeah, this one interview, the psychiatrist asked if Kuklinski had a question for him. He asked him a good question. I forgot what the question was, but the psychiatrist answered it honestly or whatever. And I was like, I don't know, man. The way this Kuklinski's looking at him, he's like, oh, I might want to kill this guy. I don't know, man. It's just maybe because it was Kuklinski. But he claimed to have murdered anywhere from 100 to 200 men. But hey, if you're a contract killer, it's possible. Often in gruesome fashion, yes. He killed in all sorts of ways, by the way. Shooting, stabbing, cyanide, like he'd blow cyanide in people's faces, slip it in their food. I think I said stabbing, strangulation, all that shit, and he would torture them as well. It was often, he would kill often on the request of their client, so however the client wanted them to go. Most of these additional murders have not been corroborated. He also alleged that he worked as a hitman for the mafia and that he was a participant in several famous mafia killings, including the murder of mob boss Paul Castellano and Carmine Galante, mob soldier Roy DeMeo. Yo, I'm gonna do a video on Roy DeMeo. He's a pretty savage too. And Teamster president Jimmy Hoffa. Yeah, Jimmy Hoffa just kind of disappeared. These claims are considered to be dubious by law enforcement and mob experts. Well, you don't know because they're a secret society after all, and the law only knows what they know because the mob only tells them what they need to tell them for the most part, unless they're snitches. But you know, it's a very close-knit type of thing. Only the only people who know are the people who were involved, if you know what I mean. He was subjected to three HBO documentaries aired in 1992, 2001, and 2003. Yes, like I said, several biographies in 2012 feature film. Yeah, that's what I mentioned earlier. Yeah. Well, that's basically the summary of Kuklinski. His brother was also in prison, well, sent to prison for raping and murdering a 12-year-old girl. So that's pretty fucked up too. So let's get into his early life. So he was actually born in his apartment, not the hospital, in Jersey City, New Jersey, to Stanislaw Stanley Kluczynski, a Polish immigrant from wherever that is, who worked as a bakerman on the Delaware, Lackawanna, and Eastern Railroad. Okay. And Anne McNally from Harrisumlas, a daughter of Catholic Irish immigrants from Dublin who worked in a meat packing plant during Richard's childhood. He was the second of 4 children. Nice. So according to Richard, his father was a violent alcoholic who beat his children regularly and sometimes his mom. And Richard's father abandoned the family while Richard was still young, but returned periodically, usually drunk, and his returns were often followed by more beatings for Richard. His mom was also often abusive. She would beat Richard with a broom handle, sometimes breaking the handle on him, and use other household objects as well. So a toxic environment, according to Richard. He recalled an incident during his teenage years, preteen years, when his mother attempted to kill his father with a kitchen knife. His mother was a zealous Catholic and believed that the father's stern discipline should be accompanied by strict religious upbringing, the same way she was raised. So she attempted to kill the father, but she was also a devout Catholic and believed that the discipline, well, the beatings, I guess, should be accompanied by the strict religious upbringing she was exposed to. Okay, that was a little bit to comprehend right there. That wasn't that clear. She raised her son in the Roman Catholic Church, where they became altar boys. Kuklinski later rejected Catholicism, and Richard regraded his mother as a cancer who destroyed everything she touched. Oof, so a toxic person. So a straight toxic person. But he had 3 siblings, like I mentioned. His older brother, Florina, died at Florian, F-L-O-R-I-A-N, died at an age of 7 from injuries inflicted by his father during a violent beating. I'm pretty sure he throwed him down the stairs or something and his neck broke. And they made it, when the police came, they said he tripped and fell or something. The family lied to the police, saying the brother had accidentally fallen down this flight of steps, fallen down the stairs. The dad abandoned the family shortly after he murdered the first son. Kuklinski, who was the second son, had a younger sister, Roberta, and a younger brother, Joseph, who in 1970 was convicted of raping a 12-year-old girl and murdering her by throwing her off the top of a 5-story building. And that was the younger brother who did that. Yeah, that's sad. Along with her pet dog. Oh, that's an extra layer of shit right there. Fuck that guy. When asked about his brother's crimes, Kuklinski replied, "We come from the same father." Oof. But, Kuklinski wasn't out here raping people. He didn't even kill women or children. So his victims were exclusively men. And he wouldn't kill a woman unless she was a killer herself. But, when they were younger, him and his brothers or whatever would torture dogs and small animals and stuff, like tying them to trains, well, moving trains, and throwing them in incinerators and shit. It was fucked up. But, there's not all that much on the early life. But, that's sad. But he did also say in an interview, if he could, he would kill his dad. That's what he said. But, so a tragic upbringing here. But, there are people with tragic upbringings that don't become killers. Because I saw this one thing, it was a Navy SEAL whose father almost killed him. He went on to become a Navy SEAL, a doctor, and a fucking astronaut, bro. Like, yeah, circumstances help shape someone, but they're not to define their destiny, if that makes sense. But yeah, Richard was a big. He was 1.96 meters, which is 6'4", and he was like fucking 300 pounds. Like, he was a big fucking dude. When they arrested him, He said, like, the police and stuff said it took like five of them just to get the handcuffs on and tackle him to the floor and stuff. It was a wild. It was pretty wild. So, his early crimes, he was committing crimes when he's a young kid and stuff, but in the mid-60s, he began working at the Manhattan Film Lab, where he would have access to the master copies of the most popular films, and he would bootleg copies of Disney animated films, which he could then sell. Yes, and he later discovered there was a lucrative market for pornographic movies, which he would also copy and sell them and stuff, and that's what eventually got him connected with the mob. But he was also once arrested for passing fraudulent checks, the only crime he was charged for prior to his arrest for murders. That's a pretty good arrest record. Only one charge, only one prior charge to his murder charges. He was photographed and fingerprinted, but the charges were dropped when he agreed to pay back the money owed. Several of his known murder victims were men he had met through trafficking pornography and drugs. Yeah, he'd kill them, so there's no evidence. One dude said if Richard Kuklinski called you a friend, that's a bad thing, because he would kill you. He also headed a group that specialized in burglaries. Yeah, I said that. This group consisted of Gary Smith, Barbarara, Barbarara Deponer, Daniel Deponer, so brother and sister maybe, or brother and brother, I don't know. Percy House and Kuklinski himself, yeah. And then yeah, there's that's pretty interesting right there. So one of his murder victims was Gregory Meliband. And he was killed on January 30th, 1980. He shot him five times when he was gonna sell him some pornography tapes, and he was robbed for $27,000. And his body was found in a 55-gallon drum, and he took a plea deal for this murder, and he admitted to shooting him five times and all that stuff. And yeah. His brother had told the police that Kuklinski did it, and he was met with Kuklinski on the day he disappeared. So yeah, that's pretty strong evidence. There's a Paul Hoffman. There's the murder of Paul Hoffman in 1982. He was a pharmacist who frequented the store in Peterson, New Jersey, a storefront with a large background, a large back room where a wide variety of stolen items could be bought and sold. Interesting. So he probably went to go buy some stuff with a lot of money and was killed. Yeah, killed for $22,000. Huh. God damn. It doesn't say how he killed him, but he disappeared. Disappeared. Yep. So, in the early 80s, Gary Smith was killed because he was part of their burglary crew, I guess. And one of his crew members were going to testify against them. Percy House was going to testify against them. He's placed in protective custody. So warrants were placed for the whole crew or whatever. And Gary Smith was he left the hotel Kuklinski bought for them so they could lay low, and he wanted to go see his daughter or whatever. So this angered Kuklinski, and I'm guessing this is he thought he was gonna inform on him. So he killed him pretty much, and that's pretty much what I'm gathering from this reading right here. Oh, so a bunch of people other than Kuklinski decided he had to die. So Barbara Deponer, Kuklinski, Daniel Deponer, and House, who was also in jail at the time, decided that Smith had to die so he couldn't inform on them. So Kuklinski therefore fed Smith a hamburger laced with poison, followed by Daniel Depenner strangling him with a lamp cord. God damn, I wonder what kind of poison they used. According to forensic pathologist Michael Bandon, Smith's death would probably have been attributed to non-homicidal in nature. Yep, like an overdose or something. Had Kuklinski relied solely on the cyanide, yet cyanide poison. It was kind of his little staple, I guess you could say. Because cyanide usually comes up as like a heart attack or something. However, the ligature marks around Smith's neck from the cord proved he was murdered. And Deppner's ex-wife, Barbara, oh, that's the wife. Okay, so this was like a family ordeal, kind of. Failed to return with the car to remove the body. They placed it in between the mattress and the box spring. Oof. Over the next 4 days, a number of patrons rented the room, and although they thought the smell in the room was odd, most of them did not think to look under the bed. Ooh, that's why I don't like hotels. I always check under the bed, bro. Maybe you'll find money or a dead body. That's why I don't like showering in other people's places either, because you never know what they did in their bathtub or whatever. They could cut up a body, you never know. But, finally, on December 27th, 1982, after more complaints from guests about the smell, the motel manager investigated and found the decomposing body. Oof. Oof. That'd be wild. But, yeah. New York back in the day, back in the 80s, was a fucking battleground covered in bodies from mob wars and stuff. But after the murder of Smith, Kuklinski moved Deppner to an apartment in Bergenfield, New Jersey, belonging to Rich Patterson, then fiance of Kuklinski's daughter, Marika. Patterson was away at the time, but Kuklinski had access to the apartment. At some point between February and May 1983, Deppner was killed by Kuklinski. Oof. Investigators later deduced that he was murdered in the Patterson's apartment after finding a blood stain on the carpet. Kuklinski enlisted Patterson's help to dispose of Deppner's body, telling Patterson that the victim was a friend who had been in trouble with the law and at some point must have broken in and killed him over the weekend. Ooh. He added that it was best to dump the body to avoid trouble with the police. Afterwards, Kuklinski urged Patterson to just forget about the incident. Yeah, just forget about it. You just helped me get rid of a body. Kuklinski made another mistake when he told an associate that he had killed Deppner. Yep, Deppner's body was found May 14th, 1983, when the cyclist riding down Clinton Road in a wooded area of West Milford, New Jersey, spotted a corpse being eaten by turkey vultures. Kuklinski had wrapped the body inside green garbage bags before dumping it. So was it like a full body wrap, or did he cut that jank up? What? I'm guessing it was a full body thing. But, the cause of death was undetermined, although they noted pinkish spots on the skin, a possible sign of cyanide poisoning. Okay, so a possible poisoning. Deppner had also been strangled. Law enforcement theorized that Deppner must have already been incapacitated, such as by poison, as he had no defensive wounds, and healthy adult men are rarely killed by strangulation. Yeah, makes sense. Strangling's hard, man. It's hard unless they're incapacitated. The medical examiner found that Deppner's stomach was full of undigested food, meaning that he had died shortly after or during a meal. Makes sense. The beans that Deppner had eaten were burned, so they resonated that it must have been a home-cooked meal, as a restaurant would probably not get away with serving burnt food to customers. Interesting. Makes sense. Investigators noted that the body had been discovered just 3 miles from a ranch where Kuklinski's family often went horseback riding. Oof, why so close to where you frequent, bro? Deppner was the third associate of Richard Kuklinski's to have been found dead. It's not a good look, man. Not a good look. But if you're into some shady shit, anything could happen. But yeah, all of this burglary gang stuff and all this stuff is pretty much new to me. I didn't know all that. I knew about the porn stuff and stuff and the alleged mob hitman stuff, but this burglary gang stuff, didn't know much about that. That's pretty interesting. Louis Masguet was discovered September 25th, 1983, and it was found near a town park off Clowsland Mountain Road in Orangetown, New York, with a bullet in the back of the head. He disappeared over 2 years earlier. Okay. On July 1st, 1981, the day he was due to meet Kluklinski at New Jersey Diner to purchase a large quantity of blank video cased recording tapes, okay, from which Maskey had hidden $95,000 in his van. Okay, that's yeah, makes sense. His body was stored in a freezer and was found 15 months later. Kuklinski would later say he shot Maskey in the back of the head after accepting a plea deal with prosecutors. Word. Yeah, the thing with prosecutors is it's their job to get convictions, and if you don't get the convictions, there's more of a chance they could bury you depending on the evidence. So, accepting a plea deal or whatever doesn't always mean you did it. It's just so you're more likely to get out one day, if that makes sense. But even if you're innocent, they could still sentence you to way more time than the plea deal or whatever, but you never know. Kluklinski did not allow the body to thaw completely before he dumped it, and it was also wrapped in plastic garbage bags, which kept it insulated and partially frozen. Oof. Rookie mistake. Just kidding. The Rockland County Medical Examiner found ice crystals inside the body on a warm September day. Had the body thawed completely before discovery, the medical examiner stated that he probably would have never noticed Kuklinski's trickery. Yep. Detectives also realized that Maskey was wearing the same clothes his wife and son had said he was wearing the day he disappeared. Oof. The discovery that Kuklinski had frozen Maskey's body is what led authorities to nickname him the Iceman. Yes, like I said, ish. But yeah, the newspapers reporting on the subsequent trial frequently used Kuklinski's moniker, the Iceman, in headlines about the trial. Yeah, that's a good hitman name right there, the Iceman. That's a dope name, Iceman. Wasn't that like the blonde dude's nickname in Top Gun 2? Wasn't it Ice or Iceman or something like that? But yeah, it was something like that. It's because he's cold as ice. Cute. Cue cheesy 80s music. That song Danger Zone's a good song. It's a real good song. So he came to the attention of police from an informant who is working with the burglary gang somehow, probably buying stolen goods or whatever. And yeah. So, they began to build the case file on him with the five unsolved homicides, mainly the deaths of the Hoffman, Smith, Deppner, and Maskey, the ones I covered earlier, and Maliban, were all linked to Kuklinski or whatever, yet, like I said. But that's how he came to light to the detectives. But he was the last person to see any of these people alive, excuse me. But yeah, that's wild. Make sure you're never the last person to see them alive, I guess, if you learn anything from this. But a joint task force titled Operation Iceman was created between the New Jersey Attorney General's office and the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms Agency, which was dedicated to arresting and convicting Kuklinski. The ATF were involved due to Kuklinski selling of firearms. Yep. I guarantee he was involved in the mob somehow, because at that time in New York and all that stuff, the mob was very prevalent and they had their fingers in pretty much everything that was illegal, except drugs for the most part. Some of them did drugs, but back then it was very frowned upon and would get you killed, most likely, if they ever found out, for the most part. So, ATF Special Agent Dominic Polar Front went undercover for 18 months to catch Kuklinski. Starting in 1985, Kane and Polar Front worked with Phil Solomane, close long-term friend of Kuklinski, to get Prolifene close to Kuklinski. Posing as a mafia-connected criminal named Dominic Provenzano, Dominic Provenzano, nice, that's a nice name. Prolifone initially purchased a silenced handgun from Kuklinski. In recordings, Kuklinski discussed having killed a man by putting poison in his hamburger, and of a man whose dead body was kept in a freezer for 2.5 years to confuse the time of death. Yes. So he's confessing to well, not confessing, but blabbing or bragging to an undercover. Kuklinski discussed how he preferred poisoning, saying, "Why be messy? You do it in a nice, you do it. It's nice and calm," which is true. It's not messy if you do it right, I guess. He asked Prolifrone if he could supply him with pure cyanide. Prolifrone told Kuklinski he wanted to hire him to carry out a hit against a wealthy Jewish associate in a cocaine deal robbery, and recorded Kuklinski speaking in detail about how he would do it. Oof. Kuklinski had also recorded both was also recorded boasting that he had once killed a man by putting cyanide on his burger, and of his plans to kill a couple of rats. Okay. Barbara Deppner and Percy House. Okay. That's yeah, pretty locked and shut there. There's not really any arguing against that in court. On December 17th, 1987, Kuklinski met Polifrone to get the cyanide for the planned murder, which was to be attempted on a police detective working undercover after being recorded by I'm just gonna call him Mr. P, all right? By Mr. P. Kuklinski went for a walk by himself. He tested the Mr. P's cyanide on a stray dog using a hamburger as bait and saw it was not poison. Oof. Suspicious, Kuklinski decided not to go through with the planned murder and went home instead. Yes. That was actually depicted at the end of the movie. But yeah. He was arrested at the roadblock 2 hours later. His wife was charged with disorderly conduct and trying to prevent his arrest. Yes. A gun was found in the car and she was charged with possession of an illegal firearm as she had been in the car where it was found. Yeah, oof. Yeah, you'd be surprised what you can get charged for. That's pretty sucky for the most part. Some of the stuff you can get charged for is makes no sense. But yes, he was charged for the 5 murders and 6 counts of 6 weapons violations, as well as attempted murder, robbery, and attempted robbery. Officials say Kuklinski had large sums of money in Swiss bank accounts and a reservation on a flight out to the country, to that country. So where he had a flight reserved to the country where his money was. Word. Kuklinski was held on a $2 million bail bond, so you have to pay 5 or 10% of that, I'm pretty sure. And made surrender. He had to surrender his passports, okay? After the arrest, Kuklinski told reporters, "This is unwarranted, unnecessary. These guys watch too many movies." Oof. At a press conference, New Jersey State Attorney W. Carey Edwards characterized the motive of the murders as profit and said he set individuals up for business deals. They would disappear and the money would end up in his hands. Oof. Cold-blooded. So at trial, former associates of Kuklinski gave evidence, and this was including Percy House and Barbara Deppner, and including the undercover agent, Mr. P. The case was prosecuted by Deputy Attorney General Robert Carlo, while Kuklinski was represented at trial by a public defender. You think with all the money he had or made that wasn't seized, he could have got a good lawyer, but you know. Kuklinski's lawyer argued that Kuklinski had no history of violence, who only projected a tough image, including his statements to Agent P. Okay. The defense theory was that Deppner was responsible for the murder of Smith and that there was no cause of death determined for Deppner. And additionally, he argued that the testimony of House and Barbara Deppner was unreliable because they had both lied to the police in the past. Makes sense, but you'd be surprised. And House had been granted immunity from prosecution. Oof. In March 1988, a jury found Kuklinski guilty of murdering Smith and Deppner, but found that the deaths were not proven to be by Kuklinski's own conduct, meaning he would not face the death penalty. He would then be sentenced to a minimum of 60 years in prison. Ooh, snap. After the trial, he pled guilty to the killing of Maskey and Milbrand. Kuklinski was then sentenced to an additional 2 life sentences to be served consecutively. So that means one after another. The state prosecutor explained that he would then spend the rest of his life in prison, even if he was to have successfully appealed his previous convictions. Yep. Kuklinski also confessed to having killed Hoffman, but prosecutors decided not to prosecute sentencing, citing that more time would not have any impact on Kuklinski's prison sentence. Yep. As part of the deal, the gun charges against his wife and the unrelated marijuana possession charges against his son were also dropped. All right, word. Kuklinski was to be ineligible for parole until he was 111 years old. Well, goddamn. He was incarcerated at Trenton State Prison. Interesting. Interesting stuff. As for the mob ties, it was never really proven or whatever because he didn't snitch on anyone or anything like that. But I think it's likely. But he also worked with another assassin called Mr. Sofi, who he would drive an ice cream truck, and this is depicted in the movie. He was an explosives expert, and ex-military, all that stuff. And it was thought that he was straight out of a movie or whatever, because like, what kind of assassin would drive an ice cream truck? But it's pretty inconspicuous. And Kuklinski confessed to this in an interview. But he would hide the bodies in the ice cream truck and sell ice cream to kids. And Kuklinski said after selling ice cream to the kids or whatever, he would probably kill their father or something, one of their fathers. But the man's name was Robert Porngay, and he wanted to kill his ex-wife, but, there was actually a man called Robert Porngay in New Jersey, born 1945, and died 1984, and, it was, it showed in the movie when, things were getting hot for Kuklinski. In the movie, the Porngay dude or whatever offered to kill Kuklinski's family and said he knew where he lived and it would be easy. You wouldn't even wake up. And he suggested, I kill yours and you kill mine or whatever. And Richard was like, how do you know where I live? I never said that or whatever. And he basically killed him or whatever. But that's only in the movie. But he claimed to know him in real life too and worked with them. And he worked with them after the alleged mob hits went bad or whatever. And he basically got fired and told not to commit hits anymore or whatever. So he started working with Porn Gay or whatever. And yeah, they basically did freelance hitman work. And people didn't like that or whatever. And this is all allegedly according to the movie. I don't know how much truth is behind these statements, because nothing was ever confirmed, because your boy ain't no snitch. Well, Richard Kuklinski ain't no snitch. I ain't no snitch either, but you know. But it wasn't confirmed, so take it all with a grain of salt. And if you know or have any sources for that, leave it in the comments below. I also think it's said that Kuklinski was a compulsive liar or whatever, and would lie a lot. So everything he says, take it with a grain of salt, unless there's actual proof or whatever. But you never know, man. You never know. Because, like, allegedly, he would kill people just for making them angry, looking at them wrong or whatever, saying the wrong thing even, or just to test new ways out for killing people. Like, once he said he wanted to test a crossbow out, so he called over someone to his car and shot him in the face with a crossbow and drove away. And they're like, did it work? And he's like, what do you think? But it's like a crossbow to the face. And there was a picture of a fucking silver crossbow in the documentary they showed that in. It was pretty wild. The sources to all these will be in the descriptions below as well. So, you know, check those out. He did also confess all this stuff in interviews and stuff, so, you know. But as I said, take it with a grain of salt. But when he said he was a hitman or whatever, I already covered all that before. He said he alleged to kill people in multiple ways, including the crossbow, like I said. Ice picks, bombs attached to remote control toy cars. Okay, then. Firearms, grenades, as well as cyanide solution spray, which was his favorite. Yes, yes. He says he committed his first murder at 14 and would later use homeless people for murder practice. Holy. But, yeah, I don't know how true any of this stuff is. This is hard to say with characters like this. In 2020, Dominic Profumoglione, Mr. P, said, I don't believe he killed 200 people. I don't believe he killed 100 people. I'll go as high as 15, maybe. That's still a high number, but you never know. But, okay, but yeah, that's wild. Once again, Mr. P is my name for the undercover dude. But Kuklinski claims he dumped bodies in caves in Buck County, Pennsylvania, and fed his victims to flesh-eating rats in the caves. However, in 2013, Philadelphia Inquiry noted that the caves have had a lot of visitors since Kuklinski's time, and no human remains have ever been found. Lie debunked. Local cave enthusiasts Richard Kranzel also required the idea of flesh-eating rats, saying, the only rats I've encountered in the caves are cave rats, and they are reclusive and shy creatures, and definitely not fierce, as Kuklinski claims. Authorities also doubt that he stored bodies for 2 years in Mr. Softy's truck. You never know about that one, man, but yeah. Yeah, so wild. But here is Robert Porngay. That's still a wild name. The interview and documentaries Kuklinski says he killed Robert Porngay, whom he said he had been mentor to him. Oh, so Mr. Porngay said Kuklinski was a mentor to him. All right. Porngay was murdered in 1984, and he had been shot multiple times in the head. Yes, I said all of this. And he was shot in the head and found in his Mr. Softy ice cream truck. Oof. Robert had not been considered a motive at the time. robbery had not been considered a motive, alright? He was set to go to trial for blowing up the front door to his ex-wife's house. Oof. Kuklinski says that Porngay taught him how to use cyanide and other methods to kill, and that Porngay told him to freeze the bodies of Maskey, okay? However, Kuklinski says he had killed Porngay after he had threatened his family, okay? Investigators considered Kuklinski a prime suspect since 1986, but the director of New Jersey's Division of Criminal Justice said that no charges were sought because Kuklinski was convicted of other crimes, okay? In 1993, in response to his claims, Hudson County prosecutors said that new charges against Kuklinski were possible since the Porngay murder was still open, an open investigation, and that they would assess whether there was enough to prosecute, okay? And ultimately, no charges were pressed against Kuklinski for the Porngay murder. That's still a wild last name, Porngay. So his mob ties came in when he claimed to have killed Roy DeMeo or whatever, and Roy DeMeo worked for a bunch of crime families. He was he ran a crew of Jewish hitmen, basically, in the DeMeo Lounge, I believe it was called. But, yeah, he was a Gambino crime family member, Roy DeMeo. Wait, I might be thinking of someone else, but I'm not sure, so don't take my word on who Roy DeMeo was. But in an interview from 1993 book called Iceman, The True Story of a Cold-Blooded Killer by Anthony Bruno, he described that DeMeo as a mentor of his whom he had met after he fell behind on a loan he had taken out to distribute pornography. Okay, well, yeah, that makes sense. That's how he could have his mob ties. He received a beating and later became business partners. Kuklinski says DeMeo taught him how to murder for hire. Okay, yeah, makes sense, makes sense. This is all depicted in the movie, but you know, Hollywood and stuff, you never know how true any of this stuff is. So, yeah. Take it for what you will, believe what you want. People think that DeMeo was actually killed by his own crew, and that there is no suggestion that Kuklinski was involved. And Kuklinski is not mentioned in Capaccini and Jen Mustaine's book about the DeMeo crew, okay? Murder Machine, or Albert DeMeo's account of his father's life in Mob for the Son, okay, word. So, could be a lie, could not be, but it most likely is. But he could still have been a contract killer, though. Still very possible. But, yeah, alright. So, let's get a little into his marriage. Let's dive into his personal life, his marriage and stuff. So, Kuklinski was married a few times, I guess. His first marriage was to a woman 9 years his senior named Linda, so 9 years older than him, with who he had 2 sons. Okay, so he had like 4 kids, word. Richard Jr. and David. While Richard was working for a trucking company, he met Barbara Pederick, who was a secretary at the same firm. Kuklinski and Barbara married in 1961 and had 2 daughters, Merrick and Christine, and a son, Dwayne. Okay, so he had 5 kids. That's also news to me. I didn't know he was married twice. You learn something new every day. Barbara describes his behavior as alternating between good Richie and bad Richie. Good Richie was a hard-working provider and an affectionate father and loving husband who enjoyed time with his family. Barbara remembered that when Merrick became seriously ill soon after she was born, Richard stayed up all night to take care of her. Oof. And then Bad Richie would appear at irregular intervals, so maybe a little bit of split personality here. Maybe. I'm not a psychiatrist or anything. Sometimes, one day after another, other times, not appearing for months. was pronoun to unpredictable fits of rage, smashing furniture, and domestic violence. During these periods, he was physically abusive to his wife, one time breaking her nose and giving her a black eye, and emotionally abusive towards his children. Yeah. Murick later recalled that he once killed their dog right in front of her to punish her for coming home late. Aww, fuck that guy. Barbara claimed in an interview that once during an argument in the car, she told Richard she wanted to see other people. Oof. Richard responded by silently jabbing her from behind with a hunting knife so sharp she did not feel the blade go in. So he stabbed her? Holy. He told her that she belonged to him and that if she tried to leave him, he would kill her entire family. When Barbara began to scream at him in anger, he throttled her into unconsciousness, so choked her. Murick also remembered a number of road rage incidents involving her father, okay? Kuklinski's family was the Mount, New Jersey neighborhood were never aware of his activities and instead believed he was a successful businessman. Barbara suspected that at least some of his income was from illegal activities due to their lifestyle and large amounts of cash he often possessed. Makes sense. But she never expressed these words to him, instead maintaining a don't ask, don't question philosophy when it came to his business life. Yeah, that's a good words to live by. Don't ask, don't tell. If you don't know anything, don't question it. It can't hurt you for the most part. That's how I live, kind of. Don't ask, don't tell. You need some help with something? All right, bet. I'm not going to ask any questions for the most part. Choosing not to ask about his business partners or how he made his money. Yeah, okay. If Richard suddenly left the house in the middle of the night, Barbara would never ask where he was going. Yeah, ignorance is bliss kind of deal. The Kuklinskis divorced in 1993 when Richard was in prison. Barbara said the divorce was for money reasons. She continued to visit him in prison, but only about once a year. Oof, at least she visited, I guess. But, there's, his personal life for you. I didn't know some of this stuff, so, I'm learning with you guys. Learning with you guys. But, yeah, sorry this one was a little everywhere and a bit choppy and maybe a little inconsistent. I've seen the movie a bunch of times, I've seen a bunch of different interviews, so I know a lot of stuff about them. And I was reading off a website or whatever, but as I said, all of the websites and sources I used will be in the description below. So yeah, I hope you had a good Friday, I hope you enjoyed this video, and I hope you have a good rest of your evening and a good weekend. So that's Richard Kuklinski, aka the Iceman. Thank you for listening to this episode on the Murder House Radio Show. I hope you have a good rest of your Friday or whenever you listen to this. Check out the social medias and the sources in the description below. Make sure you hit the like and subscribe button. Once you hit the subscribe button, hit the bell notification and select all to get all notifications if you are listening on YouTube. If you're listening on a podcasting platform, hit follow. See you next episode. This is your host X, signing off.